I have never met in all my time interviewing people in prison, have I met someone that I feel would not necessarily be a positive addition to society.
Hello and welcome to The Daily Helping with Dr. Richard Schuster. Food for the brain, knowledge from the experts, tools to win at life. I'm your host, Dr. Richard. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, and whatever you do, this is the show that is going to help you become the best version of yourself. Each episode, you will hear from some of the most amazing, talented, and successful people on the planet who followed their passions and strive to help others. Join our movement to get 1 million people each day to commit acts of kindness for others. Together, we're going to make the world a better place. Are you ready? Because it's time for your Daily Helping. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Daily Helping Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard, and I am privileged to share with you today our guest, Diane Kahn. Diane is a founding member and the executive director of Humans of San Quentin. During the last 7 years of volunteering at San Quentin to get incarcerated men their high school diplomas, Diane has been deeply moved by the vulnerability and emotional intelligence shown by the incarcerated humans she works with. Diane feels tremendously responsible to share their stories with the outside world. The Humans of San Quentin team shares the lives of thousands of people inside the prison with the outside world through letters, art, and poetry. Through face-to-face interviews with people in prisons around the world, incarcerated people feel seen, heard, and a part of the outside world. Each time a story is shared, it transforms the lives of the prisoners and the people who hear the stories. Diane has an unstoppable dedication to helping victims and offenders heal and transform their lives. What better a guest for the Daily Helping? Diane, welcome to the show. It is wonderful to have you with us today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Richard. I'm honored that you want to use me, as I like to call it, as a conduit for hearing voices from inside. So I've sat down and heard from over 2,000 people incarcerated around the world. So it is an absolute pleasure to share their voices with you today.
Well, I can't wait to dive into these messages. But what I want to do first is I'm always fascinated by people's why, people's journey. So talk to us about what put you on this path you're on today, helping spread so many voices.
Well, there's sometimes signs that we get in life that we don't maybe always listen to. And I think it was the late 80s, and I was graduating high school, and that movie came out, Silence of the Lambs. And I remember that scene where Jodie Foster is going downstairs, and she sits there in front of Anthony Hopkins and is just kind of a psychological thriller at that moment. And I knew at that moment that I wanted to have that experience. But then I went on and was getting my master's and my teaching credential and getting married and having kids. So I didn't really take that action when I should have. And then I was on the Board of Education at the University of San Francisco and found out they had a presence inside San Quentin and instantly jumped at it. So I would go in the morning and teach curriculum to men. And then at night, I would bring in a free person, for lack of a better word. And they would teach alongside someone incarcerated, and we would teach guys to get their high school diploma. And I was just moved, like you said, that truth that I was learning, I've now taken it as my personal plight to kind of educate the world through people like you to be able to really have people see the humanity of the people that are in each and every one of our communities.
You know, it's interesting because many people just at a glance and back in it feels like 1 million years ago when I did forensic psychology work, I did a lot of evaluations in prisons and jails, and I would go in and meet with the people. And I know your work was very different, but there is absolutely a stigma when you start talking about prisoners. I mean, you're talking about people that many feel obviously shouldn't have access to these things, or they're there because they have a debt to pay, and you know, all these negative things. I'm curious, because you've met with thousands of prisoners as you've been doing this, and many of them I know are there for different kinds of things, right? But so in terms of remorsefulness, in terms of owning what they did, wanting to change, wanting to be better, wanting to be different, what has your overall experience been like with respect to those things, working with people who are incarcerated?
Some of the first questions people ask me are, do you feel safe? How can you go in there? And I often tell them I feel safer inside there than I do out here. So they already have social distance where, you know, you can't come within a couple feet of each other. And there are guns and towers that are pointed down at us. But I think most importantly, what people don't always gather is that should they do something to a free person like me, their life is forever changed. They will immediately in California be put into a solitary confinement, into a cell for 90 days. No one will talk to them, ask them maybe potentially what happened. They'll get written up, which will then take their parole board hearing away. And then they'll be shipped off to another prison. So I say that only to prove the point that someone like you or I or any free person walking inside is a gift to them. You're working on their pro-social skill, especially in San Quentin. It's part of their resume. They are then trying to make their life better for themselves and to help them upon release. So very much rehabilitation is then connected with reentry. And me walking in that day or our team walking in that day is very much there to serve these, in this case, men in San Quentin or trans, to help them get that leg up. So I have never met in all my time interviewing people in prison, have I met someone that I feel would not necessarily be a positive addition to society. Granted, I'm not a psychologist, but I know that the people I talk with are actively working to make themselves better.
So you've interviewed thousands of people. What are some of the common themes and connected elements that you've observed kind of across the board in your interviews?
I would say number one, hope. I've never met someone that doesn't embody this hope of a better life, of better relationships and making redemption for what they've done. But they're very much eager to give back to society. So a lot of them will then come to our group, hear about us, and want to help. We even received in the mail this morning a check from someone inside for $25. So I don't know what that's equivalent to what our salary would be out here, but they make 21 cents an hour. So for them to be able to want to make a monetary gift to us is huge. They very much want to help. They want to get back into their community. And it rings true with a lot of the men that I work with that they want to go back and help you. Because I think that's where they see the problem in our society, or they feel that they wish they had listened to someone or wish they could change their life. So for sure, getting back outside and helping with people not walking back into prison like they have.
I'm wondering, I know there's so many stories, so I'm going to kind of put you on the spot here a little bit, but share a couple of really powerful stories that moved you tremendously with us.
There's so many, but one that comes to mind is Jose Lopez. He's incarcerated inside San Quentin. He goes by Freddie. And he comes to prison fully tatted up. He's got face tattoos. And he goes to apply for the job in the kitchen where he's had tons of experience. And the staff member, the woman there, says, no. Can't have a job with me. He's like, what do you mean? You know, I've got a letter of recommendations. I've got a lot of work. She's like, no, you look like you're a bunch of trouble, Freddie. So he goes and then gets other jobs. And he writes to us and tells us about how having face tattoos, how much of a stigma it had on his life. So he has a wife and children, and he would be in a restaurant and have to leave. He would be pulled over, seen as a gang member. So he really proves himself to get rid of that stigmatism and ends up getting himself a job in the kitchen. And his boss comes to him and says, you know, I really judged you the wrong way. You're one of the best employees I've ever had. So he goes that night and sees a flyer up on one of the walls that we would love to hear a story. So he came to one of our staff meetings and says, can I read you this thank you note that I wrote? So he sits there, and I actually have it if he's interested, of how by simply writing or thinking about the impact of what he was doing had upon himself and then writing it out, how much that changed him.
And letter writing is something that you guys do in exercise with everyone. Is that correct?
Yes.
So I think it's a lost art. There's a difference between getting something that somebody wrote you by hand versus something somebody texted you with their thumbs in 2 seconds. But I'm curious, you know, and again, because I know that this is kind of like talking to a scientist who's done a big study with thousands of people, right? Because you've interviewed so many people. Talk to us about what are the kind of letters in general they're writing. Are they writing, you know, forgiveness letters to victims? Are they writing letters to loved ones? And what are some of the letters that they're writing? And tell us more about how that's transformative.
So I had, when we first started, I had a business partner inside. His name's Juan Hines, and he was the senior editor of the San Quentin News, which is entirely run by incarcerated people. And I pitched him my idea, and he says, "Diane, I've been a journalist my whole life, but I've never had the opportunity to share the men's story in blue, and I've always wanted to." So we were approved by the public information officer. So every prison has one gatekeeper as to what can come in, pictures or spoken word in and out, or written stories. And Sam, who we're a big fan of, Sam Robinson, was the public information officer at the time. Fell in love with what we did, took it to our headquarters in Sacramento for the California Departments of Corrections and Rehabilitation, and we were approved for it. So originally I was just going to walk in, Dr. Richard, and interview people in person and then walk out and put it on social media. We got approved 1 month before the pandemic hit. So it was February of 2020. So up until that point, Juan and I had interviewed about 20 guys, and come summer of 2020, I've got 4 kids, we're at home, and literally even started at the kitchen table. So fortunately, the high school, my kids' high school is right near San Quentin, and a lot of their friends had been inside to visit that media center from their journalism class, and instantly they want to get involved. So that was the moment when we turned it into writing. So we went ahead and put those 20 guys up online. I was afraid to put them up or interview too many because I didn't know where this project was going and I didn't want to get their hopes up. And it caught like wildfire. So Juan and I actually made an introductory packet, and I had a roster that I mailed it to. He had literally put it from cell to cell. And the stories that we get are a full gamut. But what we specifically ask them for is one memory. So they get to choose. It's sometimes difficult, so we've got to sit down with them now that we're let back in, or they call and we can kind of walk them through it. But you can imagine some of the stories they can tell, right? They are colorful people that have experienced things that most of the population hasn't. So what I love is when they tell a story that's told by someone else or with someone else in it, because it really shows you who they are. But once again, it's more of hope and how being locked in a cell has changed their emotional intelligence. And those are the letters that they're trying and the words that they're trying to share with us.
Hey guys, Dr. Richard here. For the past 7 years, I've been privileged to bring you incredible guests who are changing the world and can help you become the best version of yourself. I'm really excited to share with you a new quiz that I created based on my clinical training that will curate for you a custom list of my top episodes and actionable strategies to help you wherever you are on your journey. All you need to do is go to drrichardschuster.com to take it, and it's 100% free. You'll be taking the next step on the journey to unlocking the power of you, and I can't wait to see where you'll go. Talk to us about that piece, because I read it in your intro, emotional intelligence came up there. You just mentioned emotional intelligence. How being locked in a cell changes their emotional intelligence. Talk to us about that.
I think when you cage a human, we have to look inside, right? So if you're ready for that, many come in straight off the streets and they still have that mentality. So they're very much in the fight or flight, simply staying alive. If they do want to change that behavior and they are tired of being sent to solitary confinement or paying for their actions while in prison, I think many of us, when you're out here in the free world, you've got a hell of a lot going on. Right? You've got potentially family, you've got your job. There's a lot of things that take your attention. They don't have that in theirs. They're given the gift of time to be able to get into themselves. and they have a lot of time to read. It's sad that in our society, and here we are in Juneteenth, that they are put in a cell to be able to then go look at who they are and not given much guidance.
The guidance piece is interesting to me because there's programs, there's things that they're supposed to be involved in so they can make behavioral shifts, accumulate vocational skills, etc. So where does that guidance come from?
Well, there's not a lot of prisons, and I haven't done a study on it that actually offer programming. But I know a lot of people that write to us, especially in the Midwest, that there's wait lists to go to school, and there's not a lot of programming available. The only reason that San Quentin is, or in even in bigger cities, there's Sing Sing in Chicago. The only reason that those prisons happen to have more programming is because of people like me and the groups that actually walk in and volunteer and offer rehabilitation. The state doesn't have the manpower or the money to bring in and offer what we can offer. Many don't have the opportunity for programming. They've got to go and somehow get it themselves. A lot of people find it through their church service that comes in. So the Bible, I think, is a big proponent, and faith. So there's a lot of people that write to us about their church group that help them. And then if they're lucky, they'll have one or two people that actually have come into that prison. Or if you get someone, a staff that works for the Department of Correction that cares about you, those are the stories we hear from actual connections of people that walk in and are there to talk to them and to help them. We all need personal connection.
Sounds like we need to clone you, Diane, so that you can go to some of these other prisons.
But yeah, I would love it. I thrive in there, so thank you.
But now you're doing this around the world. So how many prisons are you guys, is your organization, tapping into?
Oh my gosh, I haven't counted. I think we're over 190 in the U.S.
Okay.
And then I've been in New Mexico City. I've been in Guatemala City. I even went into the prison that's owned by the MS-13 gang down there. Many in Colombia. Just last December, I was in Melbourne, Australia, Oslo, Norway, Dublin, Ireland, Leicester, U.K., so a lot. It's a big span.
Do you find that thematically, the things that people write about, the things that these prisoners talk to you about around the world, the themes are pretty constant?
100%. But it's ironic. So I was at a conference in Oslo, and there's usually tables that are around where people are talking about their organization or something. So here I am, and there's these dolls that are made, and I'm talking to the gentleman behind the counter, and he's incarcerated, currently incarcerated. Now, the doors are open, we're in a town, could walk out. Here I am, awestruck, because we don't have work release that I'm familiar with. I think they said there's a couple in the U.S., but I'm not really familiar. What's beautiful about that is they're given the opportunity in Oslo to go out in the world, and if they recidivize, they're then brought back in, right? They sleep there every night, or their time outside then gets constrained. So I'm talking to this man and talking about, you know, how it feels to be out in the free world, and how he viewed his incarceration is the same as the men that I work with in San Quentin, and they never leave. So it comes down to taking away someone's humanity, taking away someone's dignity that really then impedes who they are. So that is universal.
What would you want people to know about incarcerated individuals that they might not know? Or rather, let me frame that differently. What preconceived notions that people might have would you want the listeners to know that they should shift?
There's an aha moment that I had as I'm sitting and talking with people that I think if we all heed a little of this advice, that if we really sit down and listen to someone's story, there's more that binds us together than tears us apart. So my number one message is lose the narrative. Lose what you're hearing on the news. Start fresh and really look at the human that's in front of you and treat them as you would want to be treated.
Where do you see your project in 10 years?
When you're working, you're always trying to make a 5-10 year plan. And as I was telling you, Juan and I had never planned to be out of San Quentin, right? We never expected to be around the U.S. So I'm still catching up from 4 or 5 years ago when we went live. So for me to look 5, 10 years out. But I love that question, because if it were up to me, there would be an office like ours. We're right in San Quentin Village. We have 35 high school interns that come to us and help us write to people in prison. And I would have one of those in every town where there is a prison around the world. So we could plant seeds of change and get those voices out there and let people know that there are people incarcerated that have done heinous things, but they can be rehabilitated and they can be put back into our society and we will still be safe. In fact, we will be safer if we spend time with them in prison and help them rehabilitate. Because 90% of the people that we are housing today will be let out. If we do not get ourselves in there and do what we need to do to recidivize, help them not recidivize, then we will be safer.
You may have just done it, but I have to ask it anyway. I wrap up every episode, Diana, as you know, by asking my guests a single question, and that is, what is your biggest helping, that one most important takeaway you'd like somebody to walk away with after hearing our conversation today?
Great question. And I think this is really, really hard. My mom used to tell this to me when I was little. Don't judge. Don't judge. Like, we go back to the story that I told you about Freddie. From that lady that was working in the cafeteria, he wanted a job, had plenty of recommendations. And she judged a book by a cover, right? He had tattoos on his face. Don't be that person. Listen to someone, look inside of them, try to erase the judgment.
Well said. Diane, where can people find you online and learn more about the work you're doing?
Oh my gosh, thank you. So we're at humansofsanquentin.org, and we're on all your favorite social media channels with the same name, Humans of San Quentin. And we've actually started a podcast. We've had 8 episodes go out, and these are victim offender dialogues. So I interview both parties, those that caused the harm and those that received the harm, and I interview them after they have sat down together. So there's, it's called the Prison Podcast.
That's wild. We will link to everything Diane Kahn, Humans of San Quentin, including the podcast in the show notes at drrichardschuster.com. Well, Diane, this was a fascinating interview. The work you're doing is very important, so don't stop no matter what. And really, I want to thank you for coming on The Daily Helping today.
Oh my gosh, I need to thank you more than you thanking me for uncovering a part of society that we've all been trained to just put away. So Dr. Richard, I thank you for being open and wanting to get to know those people behind the wall. So thank you.
Absolutely. And to each and every one of you who took time out of your day to listen to this, if it piqued your curiosity, if you're inspired, go give us a follow and a 5-star review on the podcast app you like to listen to your shows on, because that is what helps other people find the podcast. But most importantly, go out there today and do something nice for somebody else, even if you don't know who they are, and post in your social media feeds using the hashtag #MyDailyHelping, because the happiest people are those that help others.